Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show. Hey guys, the podcast will start in just a second. I thought it was important to document what was happening just right now. So for about a year and a half, I did this documentary style podcast of where I kind of talked about what was going on in my career and my life. And now we're back to the conversations. And we've got a great one with Rampage Brown today. But right now I am trying to decompress after debuting on TNT and AEW. I'm in the arena. I'm watching Chris Jericho tag with Sammy Guevara right now. But I just wanted, hopefully the euphoria, is that the right word, that I feel in my body can be expressed through podcasting. This is such a wonderful moment. The match went really well. Everyone cheered for me. My cousin was in the crowd. I had some friends in the crowd. My friends and family all watched on TV. They got to just turn on the TV on TNT, a channel that we all know here in America, and watch me on TV do the thing that I do, which is pro wrestling. I didn't get super emotional, but there is this giant sense of pride in my heart, and I hope some of you have it too, especially the ones who've been listening to me for so long, going through, you know, a lot, and to come out on this side over 20 years into a wrestling career and be a part of something where I feel I belong and the people in charge want me and know I'm good and have been on shows with me for years. You know, I just went and did my match the way I do my match, and you know, that's acceptable on a higher level. I always knew it would be, and today proved it was, and this is just the start. Well, you know, I'm moving forward with AEW, and also I'm gonna be doing all the other indies. You'll see me traveling, but for a lot of the times you'll see me on Dark and Dynamite and be a part of the AEW family. So I just wanted to say that. During this podcast, you'll hear me talking before I got to the arena, but now I'm at the arena, the show's happening, and right now the podcast is about to happen. All right, enjoy the show. Thanks.
Is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana.
All right, how you guys doing? Come on in, sit down, relax. You're about to listen to the Art of Wrestling, a professional wrestling podcast. The life podcast is personal journals and entryway into the minds and souls, the hearts and lives of people involved in the world of professional wrestling. I am your host. My name is Colt Cabana. I am a debuter. I am a surpriser. I'm an improviser. I am elite. I am all elite. Most importantly, though, I am a professional wrestler, and I am not coming to you live from my studio apartment in Chicago, Illinois. I am at a Fairfield Inn in Denver, Colorado, in the corner of a hotel room, half whispering, half yelling into a microphone under a bed tent that I have made, so the sound is a little better, and also so nobody can hear me in the hallway, but I'm 100% everybody can hear me in the hallway. Before we go any further, this is a fan-supported and listener-supported podcast supported by people just like you. We give it to you most Thursdays, ColtCabana.com, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcast from. A couple great ways that you could support: rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, tell a friend, tweet it out, TikTok it out, just like I do. The two best ways: Patreon.com/ColtCabana. That's where you'll get all of the ad-free archives of this very podcast, early access to new podcasts, video content of this podcast, Instagram live talk shows, Patreon-only audio and video, Edinburgh Fringe videos, never-before-seen acting videos that I've put out there, personal post-podcast shout-outs like you'll hear at the end of this one, and of course, every single month for the $10 tier, an Art of Wrestling cover collector's pin. This month, episode 245, myself and Roddy Piper. If you sign up at any time in March, I will ship those out to you at the very end of March. The other way to support cultmerch.com, digitalcult.com, t-shirts, buttons, pictures, posters, DVDs. I have moved all of the new t-shirts over to prowrestlingtees.com/ColtCabana. I just put up 10 new designs. The Cabanada ones are up, and also the New Japan exclusive ones are up. But at Colt Merch, you can get the brand new New Japan style towel and an 8x10 signed by myself and Yano, where Yano is icing my balls. All right, those are the supporting ways. But the cool thing is, you're here for a podcast. You're here to listen to me talking with my friends. Again, I feel I'm talking so loud, and I'm in this new company now. Everybody in this fucking company is outside in one of those hallways. Before, if I did this in New Japan, there was maybe 5 or 6 gaijin. It's literally 50 wrestlers in the hallway listening to me talk to myself. What kind of impression am I making? Oh, you got to start somehow, though. Because I put these out basically Wednesday at midnight. I usually do this part Tuesday or Wednesday, and now I'm on the road. So I'll have to start doing these earlier, which I'm not good at. I'm a big procrastinator, but here they are. This is it. Today, Rampage Brown is on the show, and Rampage is such a great wrestler from the UK, part of the UK scene. If you don't know the UK scene, that's always the fun part of this podcast. We're introducing you to new wrestlers, and maybe he's one of them. Maybe you've known him. Maybe you've seen him on shows for years in the UK. Maybe you saw him down at FCW on one of those random Florida shows. Or maybe you saw him on ITV as part of World of Sport. Either way, you're going to sit down, you're going to hear a really nice lad, a friend of mine, and I'm excited for you to listen to the talk with myself and Rampage. But I got to imagine the talk of the town right now, for me, my family, my friends, and my fans, is myself taking a new direction in the world of professional wrestling. It's not the talk of the town for the world of wrestling, I understand that, but for a certain sector, a certain niche, a certain group of people who have been following this journey, it is the talk, and it's important, and it's cool, and it's fun. This is something that I've known about that was going to come together for a while now. I did decide to leave Ring of Honor in September of 2019 with no plan going forward, hoping to get on a bunch more New Japan and just be independent. But as I decided to part ways, you know, I officially slash unofficially kind of let everybody else know that, hey, I'm around. And thanks to Matt and Nick Jackson, along with the whole crew, this AEW deal came to be. Gonna wrestle, gonna work backstage, do a little bit of commentary, and help out any single way that I can. Over 20 years of experience, help out the way I can for people who want it, people who want the help. And that's the coolest part. I'm not saying, hey, I know everything, listen to me. They're saying, hey, you know stuff, we want to listen to you. And that was the most intriguing part and humbling part in order to sign a contract. I was originally supposed to come out in Chicago, do something, and then go right to the New Japan Cup and then like re-debut at the end of March when the New Japan Cup was over. But things changed. Coronavirus scares came in. And so we went with a new direction. And the direction was helping out SCU, doing some stuff with the Dark Order. And as this plays, you just watched me on TNT. And national television, wrestling for AEW, and more than likely I'll be wrestling next week too. So stay tuned for this new journey. So cool, so excited. And if you've been listening since day one, you know exactly how fulfilling this is for me to hit this point in my career. All right, but I still want to make sure we talk about other wrestlers. And of course, I mean Rampage Brown, who's on the show, but we got a lot of stuff before we get to Rampage. All right, the mini talk, it's a fun one. Courtesy of some of the characters on Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling, the podcast. This is Helen. Helen is an older lady, and we don't like to use the term rat anymore, but she gets around. Helen gets around.
Well, 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 look at us.
Hey, Helen.
Here we are, just lying on my velvet couch with the fireplace roaring.
You know, I thought I requested only wrestling personalities from the Marty and Sarah podcast.
But what I do is really, I make the wrestlers. I'm the Del Close of wrestling.
Okay, this is a wrestling podcast. I don't think any nerd is going to know who Del Close is.
Oh, you'd be surprised. You've got a lot of fucking improv marks that listen to your shit. Well, and right now they're going, ooh, me? Yes, you.
We are doing the Lincoln Lodge show where Sarah teaches me how to do improv, so.
Yes, and I think you'll do wonderfully.
Okay, I mean, who are you working on these days? And I guess maybe explain if people don't know.
Well, so my deal is that I'm sort of the unofficial gatekeeper of helping wrestlers get their pushes. I'm not responsible for what happens after they get a little bit of fame here and there, but I do help them get a start. Mm. I recently blessed Chris Statlander with an out-of-this-world idea.
Which was?
To be an out-of-this-world character.
Do you want to tell them a story about me? So for a lot of people who don't know, Helen gave me the Goldman gimmick.
Yes, I gave you the Goldman gimmick, but then later, after we had had such a session, I could feel your testicles bumping against my ass, and I said, boom, boom, Colt Cabana. And you said, can I use that? And I said, I hope you will.
And I did.
Yes.
And that was all thanks to Helen, and that's why I am here. And Helen, when Helen asked to be on the show, she's going to be on the show.
So. And I said, listen, you're going to save your a lot of time and a lot of hassle if you just make your own gear. And you said, how do I do that? And I said, figure it out. Mm-hmm. And look at you. You've done it.
And so Orange Cassidy, I heard, was your recent.
Oh, yes. He actually got his thumb stuck to his index finger after a lengthy fingering session of me. And everybody in the industry knows I've got gluey pussy juice.
Okay.
You know, for lack of a better phrase.
Definitely a lack of a better phrase.
And he goes, oh, God damn it, Helen, my thumb stuck to my finger. And I said, why, it looks like you're giving a flimsy thumbs up. Mm. And he said, what am I going to do with that? I have to wrestle tonight. And I said, figure it out. I said, finger it out and figure it out.
Right, both. He did both.
He was so embarrassed, he put a pair of sunglasses on. He said, nobody's ever going to. And I said, whatever. And, you know, I get tired of these boys talking to me. I said, Jim, just get out of my bedroom.
And then the story was that while in the pussy juice, he goes, this pussy juice feels like the inside of an orange.
Yes. And it all sort of spiraled from there. And here he is, you know, big giant pops on, you know, Tony's little show. Tony's just a fan. He's come to my house many, many times.
Is that
right?
I
said, until you don a singlet, I will not have anything to do with you. But I did give him a little of the old Helen blessing, which was to say I did a little of the gluey on his forehead like Rafiki to Simba and
That's
the Lion King.
Very sweet of you.
Yes.
I also heard Jack Swagger was one of yours. And now you told him to do the MMA or not to do the MMA?
I told him to shut the fuck up. And if you notice, he always does well when he keeps his mouth shut.
Yeah, he doesn't talk that much.
Yeah.
Yes, art move.
He's always coming, oh, what do you think about this and this and that idea? And I go, shut the fuck up.
Just shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up. Yes. I slapped him so hard across his chest, he got the idea for We the People.
There you go. Well, it's been working well. Thanks for everything. And then any advice on the start of Back to This Podcast for me? Because I guess I'll need something.
I'll tell you something.
Okay.
I put a little bit of magic between you and Joey's pee-pee, and when you did that kiss, it planted the seed for great things, but I can't say anymore.
We'll just see them happen, huh?
We'll just have to see them happen.
Thanks, Helen. I owe you everything.
Good night, sweet boy.
All right, satirically, that was the hilarious Sarah Shockey. Listen to Helen on Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling, the podcast, along with many other characters. Subscribe where you subscribe to podcasts. All right, now it's time for me and Rampage Brown to sit in a hotel in London, England. We are at Heathrow, London International Airport.
Yeah.
Do you know this area well?
Not really. Like, mostly, like, because I'm from up north.
And so up north is Leeds. I know that because I met you at the Leeds. We met at the Leeds train station.
Train station, yes.
You remember this?
I remember that very well. Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know why I was in Leeds.
I think because you'd done a show or something and, like, got a train to meet me and Drew.
Yes.
Drew McDonald, because we was going to Skegness, I think it was.
Okay.
So,
do you think I did a show in Leeds or I did?
If I remember correctly, you was getting a train in.
Okay.
Because I was keeping an eye out on when the trains, you know, came
gotcha.
In. So, like,
I was probably doing, I want to say FSW.
Possibly.
Future Shock Wrestling, maybe.
It might have been in Manchester. Yeah, Manchester Stockport. So it could have been, or it could have been like, I don't know, Lincoln or anything really, I guess. But yeah, that was the first place. Yeah.
Right. And that was, it was 16 years ago?
Wow, yeah.
2004, probably?
Yeah, about then. Yeah.
What are we in now? 19?
2019. Yeah,
okay. 15 years ago?
Soon goes.
Is my math right on that? I hope. God, I think so.
We've had a long day, so don't.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't judge us on that.
Here's my question to you. You have grown up to be a man completely different to what you looked like then. Yes,
a lot has happened.
Man. In my head, do I look the same? Or?
Do you know what? To be honest with you, like, yeah, you're one of like Grado is one of those people that just never change. Like, you're just the same, like the same. You look, no, like you look,
yeah,
you
Grado's know like I mean? Mickey Mouse.
He generally is. Like, you know, he's just like, yeah, you look the same as you did the first time I ever met you, to be honest with you. That's the way I kind of see it. Whereas in with me, I look like a young child. Now I look like
you
someone
had dreadlocks, right?
Braids, yes. Yeah, braids. Yeah, I love the long braids. Okay. French braids, yeah.
And you were kind of thin.
Thinner.
Yeah. Thinner.
Yeah, thinner. Yeah, definitely. Right. I was a lot smaller, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And you look like a completely different person, which is,
yeah.
Who knows? Like you said, you've been through a lot.
Yeah, I've seen a lot. Yeah.
Okay, so now here's my ignorance, what I would say. You are... person of color?
Yes.
Is that like
I am. Sometimes depends
can
like
you say a brown person? Is that acceptable?
I don't know. I don't know anymore.
Did
like
you take
I think
offense to that?
I've been called a lot of things.
Yeah.
So in jest and in hatred. But yeah, so like it's hard to kind of really offend me in that respect.
Well,
but like
I'm not trying to offend you. Yeah, I'm saying is that politically
but, no, do you know what? These days I'll definitely say no. Because like everyone's offended by everything. No, I'm not bothered.
It's on the record.
Yeah. Well, and then the only reason I say that is because people are just offended by everything nowadays. Right. Do you know what I mean? So like, I mean like people, because I'm mixed race. Okay. So like people, like apparently mixed race isn't a thing. You can't say mixed race anymore. It's dual heritage.
Whoa, I didn't know that either.
Neither did I until fucking somebody told me. So yeah. I swore. Is that okay?
Perfect.
Okay. So my mom is from Leeds, England. She's British. Her granddad was from Scotland. My grandma was from Yorkshire. So that's that. And then my dad's from Ghana, West Africa.
Oh, okay.
So like the Gold Coast. I think it's next to Nigeria. I can't remember. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so that's where he's originally from. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he came over from for like university and things like that. Got his education. My mom then.
Were you in school? Was it diverse or were you the only?
I think I was, yeah. Like there was maybe just like a couple of Asian, like I think I was the only kind of person.
So
yeah.
You grew up in just like a white?
Pretty, yeah, in like areas, yeah. Like there was a lot of, not a lot, so there was a few Asian kids, you know what I mean? But yeah, I was the only kind of like of black heritage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was fun.
Cool. Brothers and sisters?
My mom, moved on, remarried when I was like 16. So as I was leaving, because my mom was young when she had me, so she was like 18 when she had me. So then
I've been on this app called TikTok. It's the worst. I don't know if you've heard of it. Probably not. You're a dad now. You don't pay attention.
No, it doesn't fucking.
But there's like they do this thing called like hot mom check,
right?
And so like these kids who are on this app for 15-year-olds,
for sure, right?
Check out my mom, and I'm like, holy shit! And they're like, and the caption's like, she had me when she was 12,
not what?
13, and like.
Well, this is bad because like when I was a kid, because my mom was like blonde hair, blue eyes, you know what I mean? She was young and stuff. So like when she used to pick me up from school, all the kids would be like, is that your sister? Oh, your sister's fit. And I'm like, shut up, man. Like that's my mom. Like that's disgusting. What the hell's wrong with you?
Yeah.
So like, especially when I went to high school as well, like people used to wind me up a lot because, you know, like my mom and everything. So like, it used to be quite frustrating.
Hated it.
Yeah. I was like, what the hell's wrong with you? You know what I mean? But that's a thing now, right?
That's a thing. but they're so young. It's just wild. Like, and especially as we're older now.
Yes.
Like the moms are just kids to us.
Of course.
And
yeah.
They have
yeah.
kids and almost the kids have kids.
Of course. Yeah. No, that's the mad thing. Especially with age, especially getting older now and just looking at stuff. You just see things completely differently. Mm.
You had a step sibling at 16?
A little sister, and then had another brother. So, but then because my mom and dad split, and my dad had another son as well. So, like, I've got a brother on my mom's side, a brother on my dad's side, and a sister on my mom's side as well. So,
were you basically the babysitter?
Not really. No, because like at that point, I was just I'd left school. I was doing my own thing. I was trying to pursue wrestling and stuff like that. So, like, my mom knew very being a dad now. At the time, And for the longest time, like me and kids, like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Like, it's not a good idea. So yeah, she knew to just kind of let me stay away.
Yeah, because you guys graduated high school at 16?
16, yeah. Yeah, and I was youngest in my year, so like I left when I was 15, but my birthday's in August, so we did our exams, June, July, whatever, and then...
And then you could go to college and then university, is that how that works?
Yes, that's how it works, yeah.
And so with wrestling, did you...
So it was funny because it was actually in my exams.
They had a wrestling exam?
No, I wish. I'd have actually done well at that, right?
We both would have gotten good.
Yeah, I think so, right?
My mom would always say that. She's like, if you studied the way you watch wrestling.
Yep. Oh, 100%. But I mean, it was there. And I was like, I think it was like a science exam or something. And I was looking, I'd finished up and I was like, right, I didn't have a clue about any of that. That is like, just like scrap paper. Then might as well be. So I thought, you know what? Academically, you know, I'm probably going to... if this is anything to go by, I might stop. I'm probably going to struggle going forward. So I thought, you know what? I just remember having the epiphany at that point. I was looking up the ceiling. I was looking across and everybody else was still doing theirs. And why have I finished mine like way before everybody else? You know, because I've done it wrong.
Right. And these people look like they all care.
And they all kind of know what they're doing, right? Well, at least they pretend they do. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna give it a go. What have I got to lose? You know what I mean? So at that point in a science exam, I'd actually made the decision to, you know, I'm gonna do this. I've always wanted to do it.
So on the final day of high school, they're not gonna fail me. I'll probably graduate this, even though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I got grades. You know what I mean? So kind of.
Yeah.
But I got grades and stuff, and like obviously I had enough to go on to college and college and sixth form and do all that kind of stuff.
Did you do that stuff?
No.
Right. Okay.
No, I didn't.
You could if you wanted to, but you were like, I want to do wrestling.
Yeah. Well, so obviously I wanted to do wrestling, but then everyone was like, yo, it's wrestling. What are you talking about?
You're from dreadlocks. Leeds. You got these braids.
Well, at the time I didn't. I was the fat kid with a shaved head. Everyone used to call me D'Lo Brown. I'm going to give this wrestling thing a go. But then everyone was like, well, you know, you need to go to college. You need to do something. You need an education. So I was like, okay, well, I love animals. So maybe I'll go into animal care, right? But obviously, all along, I just wanted to do wrestling. Yeah. So I was just doing the animal care thing to, you know, keep people happy. But I ended up, that was my plan anyway. I finished the exams, finished the school holidays, and this random job just came up. A friend of mine, he started working for this company. It was plastering.
And this was a job of professional wrestler.
So
random job for a wrestling photographer.
Unfortunately, it wasn't as simple as that. Like a lot of people tell stories of like, oh yeah, this guy just came up to me and said, you're a big guy, right? Well, you wrestle, right? Yeah, no, it was nothing like that at all in my life.
Never happens to us.
Definitely, mate, far from it. But so it was a plastering gig. So and it was just an apprenticeship. So like, I did that for a little while. It wasn't for me. Like I say a little while, I mean a few months. And it was
while training or just?
Before it even got, because at the point, at the time, it was like, why do you even start?
Of course.
Like, you know, in Britain, wrestling, and it was like the dark ages at that point. So there was like, I say the dark ages, it was like, well, you know, World of Sport hadn't been on TV.
Yeah, give me a year.
Like, so this was like summer 99.
Okay.
When I left. So it was literally then I was just like, well, where do I start? And like the internet wasn't really a thing. Mm-hmm. Like now you can go on your phone and be like wrestling schools in the area and like 17 pop up, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas in then there was-
Well, let's start in 99, there was- FWA Academy in London.
Yep.
There was that FSW that we were talking about before. That Alex Shane had set up because Declan O'Connell, he like scammed him into getting a ring or whatever.
Yeah, something along that.
Hammerlock, maybe.
Hammerlock, and that was like Kent. So that was like even like further down, I think. Yeah. Everything's down south. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I was like, I was kind of like, well.
And maybe like Mikey, like Dean and Mikey Whiplash, they all trained in the Midlands at somewhere, right?
So that's what, after a while, so like they used to have this old wrestling magazine and it was called like Whoa or something.
Was it Wow?
Wow, that's the one. Yeah,
from
Wow.
America?
Yes. There was a lot. It was all about American, right? It was American
wrestling. It was a beautifully done magazine.
It was?
Yeah, Wow magazine.
Delightful. Yeah.
I tried to get an internship there because it was in my town.
No way.
That's how fucking.
No way.
It was in Deerfield. It was in Bannockburn, which is the town over, a 10-minute drive from my house.
Serious.
Which is crazy thinking about now how obsessed I was with wrestling. The idea that this magazine was published in my town.
Of course.
And I don't know. I couldn't get one. But they had opened basically in 99 when I started. So.
Right.
Yeah. So it was probably just fresh off hot.
Well, I mean, yeah, if it's the same one, I'm pretty sure it is. So like there was a, obviously the British version might have. Be a little different, but there was a wrestling school in there. It was GBH in Stoke, where Rippy and all that kind of stuff used to where being died.
Stoke on Trent, yeah.
Stoke on Trent, right? So I was like, wow, that's only like a couple of hours away. So I got to 2000, it was like August, I found this place, rang them up, and they said, right, at the end of September, we've got like a weekend camp, so come down. So I'm like, right, well, this is the beginning. So that's what I did, and I remember it to this day. I think it was like the 20th of September, and I remember it to this day. Got the train down, went down, and stayed there for like the weekend, and it was just blue mats on the floor in a Thai boxing gym.
No ring.
No. The only ring they had was in the next room, and it was a Thai boxing ring. Yeah. So it was like, well, you know, we wasn't doing anything in there, you know.
What did mom and or dad say?
To be honest with you, it was like, as long as he's not in prison, then you do you want? Yeah. No, honestly, like they've been liberal and cool with everything. Like they just kind of, if it makes you happy, just do it.
Yeah.
You know? Like looking back and see, especially seeing other people's like.
What about letting you spend a week there? Because you were.
It was just a weekend. So it was like Friday till.
Did they look Friday into it?
No.
No, right? Like, no. So you're 17, 18?
Yeah, 17.
Not really an adult.
No, I would, 17. So I would have just been 17. So like I turned 17 in.
Going to stay with these random people that nobody knows.
Yeah.
I mean, it could turn out a totally different way.
It could do, thinking back. And I'm actually judging my parents now that I'm thinking about it. This has actually stunted me quite a lot. So I'm going to have words with them when I get home.
It's something to think about.
No, it really is. Yeah. I mean, like, obviously thinking, like, my kids now, I'd be like 17 years old, going two and a half hours away.
Staying
with people you don't know, yeah.
In a hotel or where?
I don't think so, yeah.
On the mat?
So they offered to stay on the mats, but, like, I just saved up enough money to be able to get a hotel. Okay. And it was just round the corner.
Yeah.
And it was mad because it was, like, £20. But, like, now, like, that thing, that same place, is like, £70 a night.
Right,
you know what
right.
I mean? So by the end of time, it was, like, 20, 25 quid or something.
Who's training?
Chris Curtis, a guy called Chris Curtis.
Oh,
yeah.
I just looked because there's a guy who just put out a book about being a jobber, and I don't think it's the same guy, about being a jobber in the AWA, and like, and his real name was Chris Curtis. So then I Googled Chris Curtis to see, like, oh, do I know who this guy was?
Right.
And a picture of British Chris Curtis came
out. Like a blonde mullet? Blonde mullet.
Like fat ripped.
Yeah. He was thick. He was thick. I remember.
Like a great tan.
Yeah, good tan. Yeah. And he had like the American like tassel. Spandex and stuff. Yes, tassels and stuff. Yeah.
Well, they all did, so.
Yeah, especially about, yeah. So I remember coming to pick us up from the train station and seeing him and thinking, whoa, he's massive. Like, this is a level, like, you know, I was just a little kid, you know what I mean? So.
And he, I might have worked for him later.
You know what? I'm pretty sure you will have done.
And his,
for sure.
And his missus helped out a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. They used to wrestle at like a working man's club called Bids in Stoke-on-Trent.
And I remember I worked for him the night before two Ring of Honor shows when Ring of Honor came to the UK.
Right.
And it's a pretty big deal back then.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And, I did my match. I was fine. And they're like, oh, at the end, it's a battle royal. You don't have to be in it. And I was like, I'll be in the battle royal. I got thrown out of the battle royal. I missed my post on the apron on the way out. So I just went from the top rope to the floor
murdered
my hip. Yeah. I was so fucked. And I was like, in a fucking battle royal that they told me not to do.
Yep. Yeah. It's always a case. Always. And this is the thing now, like, when someone will come up with something, I'll be like, oh no, that'll be fine. Let's do it. And I'm thinking in my mind, this could be the one. This could be the thing. You know what I mean? Like, it happens to be like every match now. I'm just like, this could be it. Like, I'll be up on like the top row for a superplex, and just a second before we're about to go, I'll be like, this could be it. Oh. This could be the last one. Boom! And I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'm winded, but I'm all
right. Right, but then it's usually getting into the ring. The other day, I twisted my ankle on the mats walking from my entrance.
Do you know, like, it happened to me, like, so, like, I've got these really bad issues with my thumbs, like, from goalkeeping when I was a kid, but they're weak as cracker bread, right? Recently, I've been having, like, the worst stuff with them. So I say recently, in the last 6 months or so. But so, like, in the last month, they've settled down and they feel good again. And then the other day, I ran into a boot. They was in a corner, they put the boot up. I took the boot in the face, bang, and as their foot came down, my hand was like this, and it just racked my thumb back. I was like, oh my God, has it come off? It was the worst thing. But it's always the dumb stuff like that.
It's also dumb that you have weak thumbs.
I do. It's from goalkeeper, man. Like every time someone like shoot the ball and it hits you like here, and it just, oh man, it railed. Like this one's...
That is weak. That's pathetic.
That one is the worst, man. Honestly, it's just, I'm ashamed of it.
Okay, so you do the roles. So the first time you wrestle, is the first time you wrestle in a ring at a real show? Yep. At your first match?
Yep.
That's so weird.
Yep.
Looking back, is that weird? Or did they prepare you for that? Did they tell you that was weird?
No. No, I think he was just trying to kayfabe, but to be honest with you, he
couldn't afford a ring.
Like, I can't get a ring. So I'm like, oh, no, you don't need a ring. Everything's, you know what I mean? It's all the same once you're in there. My very first show was it was a battle royal in the same venue that you put.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the same thing. And I actually did the music for the first half of the show.
Yeah.
And then in the interval, they did the interval. I think they did the interval, then a match, and then the rumble. So, like, I did the music for the last match before the rumble. And so, then I went back, got changed, and then went to the rumble.
So how long did it take before you were able to get that rumble spot and you were training?
So I started in September. It was like February. I mean, like, I went back and forth and did a couple of sessions, but like, I took to it quite fast, to be honest with you. So,
And were you going to shows and doing music a lot? Was that?
No, it was just that one that just the music one. Yeah, luckily, yeah. just the one. But then it was like, yeah, so I was doing that and they just did shows once a month. And it was like, they already had their established guys. So there was the guys getting on the shows and stuff. So he was literally just waiting for an opportunity and whatever, right?
Any of those guys become famous?
No, I mean, like, you've got your lights of Whippy, Mikey Whiplash, Robbie Dynamite, Dean Allmark, Tango Tim Wiley. Guys like that, yeah, okay. He was there. Yeah, so that was a class I was in, but they was all kind of established. They was doing the thing and stuff. And
so before that show, did you get in the ring to like see how you run the ropes?
Yes.
And before, did anyone teach you, or did they teach you at the school with fake ropes?
They taught me the school with fake ropes. Okay. And then when we got to the real deal, it was like, it's pretty much the same thing. Three big steps, turn, make sure it's on your right, whatever. And it was just the case of just like hoping for the best. But again, like just for some reason, I just did it, and like I was all right, you know. Okay. I just like I didn't really have a problem with it, you know. Mm-hmm. Which is funny because like helping train people now, people really struggle with like footwork and their timing and things like that. And I think obviously playing football as a kid helped my footwork, and I think it just kind of went, you know what I mean, it helped me getting into the ring and doing,
yeah, I guess,
like,
you'd be surprised
stuff.
It's weird that people getting into wrestling don't think they have to be athletes.
Well, yeah, this is my gripe at the moment. And okay. It's taken a few years for me to actually kind of like, you know what, there's no way around it. People don't understand it. Like, you know, footwork and ability and timing and movement and flexibility and all these things. That's the very fundamental stuff that comes into going into the fundamental stuff, if that makes any sense.
Right.
So like the timing and ability goes into snatching a headlock, hitting the ropes, all this kind of stuff, you know, like, you know, yeah, it really does. And it's hard to kind of try and explain that to people because that's the stuff they don't want to hear. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
some people just want to be like, they think cosplay.
Yeah.
And they characters, and that's what draws it to, which obviously.
Of course, yeah.
Right. And that brings them to the dance.
Yeah.
But I will say this, like, I bet as a coach, if you get somebody who has no athletic ability. Mm. And I, you know, I've seen this before where you're just like, I've seen someone and then 5 years later, you're like, holy shit, they know. You've taught them like the fundamentals you've learned as a child of how to play sports.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, you've taught them that.
Yes.
Which has got to be pretty cool.
No, 100%. Like the other day, like there's a guy that I've had my hands on for a while. Like I've been training for a while and stuff. And they had like a training match at the school, and like, they just had this match, and I was like, whoa, this is amazing. Like, these guys have come so far. And right. Like, I was proper like taken aback. I was like, what? Like, I had a little moment myself. I was like, this is
because of you. I mean, their work.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
You are the person who's like, you need to do this work to get better, to learn how to like be coordinated.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a guide and everything in the right place. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it was obviously it's good to know that I was involved, but yeah. Obviously they did the work, but like, wow, this just happened in front of me. It's this progression. I've just seen these guys evolve and progress and like get better, you know? So,
but like you, I was an athlete all through school and through college. So when I got to wrestling school, I was just like, well, there's going to be a million athletes. I'll be the worst probably.
Yeah.
Cause I was the worst football player in college.
Right.
And obviously everyone, you know, for the most part just wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I too caught on kind of quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, no, it definitely helped. It definitely helped. Like, and I think that's just that coordination and like, you know, like, cause I was a goalkeeper. So it was a coordination of grab, you know, and obviously I wasn't afraid to throw myself around. So I think looking back, I wanted to be a goalkeeper, a stuntman, or a pro wrestler, mainly a pro wrestler. So I think there's some kind of masochist in there somewhere, but I've not really had a, you know, sit down on the word with him. Yet.
Right. Can't diagnose you yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So then you do the one battle royal. Do you just start getting on shows and getting on shows?
No. So like I did the one battle royal and then.
And right to WWE?
Yeah. You know, some guy just called me up and was like, you know what? I saw you in the battle royal the other day. Hell of a job with the music. it was one of those things where it was like, oh, here we go, snap, like I've done it, like this is, I'll be in the main event next week, right, next month on the next show.
Yeah.
And it's just nothing, and then just not good enough for the show, and just not ready, you know what I mean? Mm. I've already got this planned out for the next three shows, so like we can't fit you in anyway. So I was like, oh god, you know, kind of not back to square one, but it was kind of, you know, it was disheartening. So I was like, right, okay, so what do I do to try? And that's where
you got, you know, a taste.
Yeah,
they took it away from you.
They took it away. That's the story of my career. But anyway, I want to get into that. But I think like Whippy and Dynamite and everybody started getting work with All Star. And like I heard about this, obviously, like the amount of work and all that kind of stuff. And like deep down, that's what I wanted. I wanted to make a living at pro wrestling, like regardless of where it was, who it was, whatever.
Or how sad the living was.
Oh, how sad the living was.
Which we learn later of those all-star wrestlers.
Yes. Yes, we do. Yeah. But yeah.
Still a living nonetheless.
It's still a living, right? Yes, you know, could be shoveling shit for a living, right?
Of course.
Oh, you was half the time. But I kind of knew about it, but I didn't really know where, to look for it. You know, I knew that I did like Seaside Wrestling, like Scarborough and things like that. So like, but who runs it? What's it about? And then when I found out there's, so like I've been going back and forth to like training and things like that, and just, oh, is there a chance yet? Oh, no, nothing. Then I remember one day I turned up and they was talking about this All-Star place, and I was like, this sounds great. This is what I need to be doing. You know what I mean? It was out 5-6 days a week. You know what I mean? So it was like, yeah, this is it. You know? So like I just sent like a little resume off to, I posted it off to All-Star, the offices, and I got a letter back. This is like what, like 2000? So like I got a letter back saying, and it was like, it took a while. It took a few months. I got a letter back saying they're in Leeds Town Hall. If I went to like the local papers and things like that and told them about like the, you know, local lad on the show, you know, sure, angle in, but you know, do them a favor, they'll do you a favor.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I like
how they were thinking.
Yeah, it was,
or Brian, business, whatever it was, I imagine.
He's a smart man. Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Obviously.
Wow. So then I got on the phone and rang him. I was timid as a sheep. I was like, oh, thank you for the, you know, all that kind of stuff as you do when you're a kid. He was like, yeah, just ring the newspapers, local newspapers, tell them you've been on the show, you've read. This is the funny thing. So he says, tell them you'll be in the tag against Gangrel and I think it was Cannonball Grizzly, you know, PNW's big year. Of course you know.
Yeah.
So it was James Mason and me against them two. And I'm like.
And obviously you knew who Gangrel was. I'm going to.
Yeah, well, I knew who Grizz was as well.
You did?
Like, okay, yeah, from PNW's WCW and stuff like that. Yeah. So I was like, what have I got myself into?
Is this going to be your first match?
This is, yeah.
Yeah, because you just did the Battle Royal.
Of course, right? I just did the Battle Royal. I told him I'd have a few more matches, you know what I mean? When I sent the thing off, I was, oh, I've had like fucking 30 matches or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's like, you know. So I was like, oh, like, and in his mind, he's like, all he needs to do is get the shit kicked out of him by Grizz and, you know, and Dave and, Gangrel. And he doesn't need to do anything or know anything. James can do the rest of the match, right?
He just needs a local guy to sell some tickets.
Exactly, right? So I'm like, well, this is insane stuff. So like, anyway, so I built myself a house, petrified. I turned up, I got there. And like, again, so I've not really been in a ring that much. And then
did you have gear?
Yes. Yeah, I did have gear. Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's one thing I always made sure I had boots and I had trunks, tights and stuff. So got to the venue and Brian's right, get in the ring, take a couple bombs in at the rope, see what you got. So I was like, oh fuck. And everyone's staring at me. So I was like, well, fuck. I slid in the ring, hit the ropes, took a couple of bombs. And I was like, yep, cool. Then I went and sat down. I said hi to everybody over here.
Yeah.
And I sat down. I was like, wow, this is it. Like this is, and then it was a saving grace, I think. So, they told us that I wasn't going to be in that tag. I was going to be, it was like a four-way tag match. It wasn't. I think it was probably, it saved me because I was like, I was petrified because, you know, it's Gangrel, you know, and it's,
well, you know. I thought this story was going to end with my first match was against Gangrel and PN News.
Fortunately not. Unfortunately not. So, we did the tag. Yeah, we did that tag. And, Brian was impressed. Brian was like, yeah, cool. Yeah, nice one. He's got some, you know, because he started bringing in like younger guys like Whiplash and Dynamite and Dean and stuff.
And so when I was there, you weren't on every show.
No.
Do you have to build to be, I mean, you're just on sporadic shows?
So he started kind of bringing in younger guys and stuff and I ended up in one of them. And it was like, you know, you get a week on the camps and then you wouldn't. But then like, obviously there was like Daz and Dave and stuff like that. So like the other lads would go and work there. And then there was like Oric Williams and stuff and Ian McGregor and stuff like that. So like, I spread myself between.
So you just started, just the networking world, how it works, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, so I started working the stuff for Brian. And then that's when I came across Drew McDonald. he was like, so like, I mean, it was pretty early on I came across Drew. Like,
and when I met you, I mean, Drew was basically like, this is my mentoree or whatever, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. Well, he
this is my kid. He kind of said,
he took me in straight away. Cause he lived like, I think it was about 3 miles away from where I lived. And I didn't know this whole time. Never knew.
Of course, Drew, I mean, was on television, was a world of sport wrestler.
Yep. Wrestled the daddy tags. He was a big deal in Germany, Finley and Rocco every night, you know. And
he's right down the street from you.
He's like 3 miles away. Not a clue. Yeah. Didn't even know. But he'd been in Dubai for a few months wrestling over there. Yeah, he came back and came straight back onto the All-Star team. So Brian was like, oh, well, there's a young lad in the EG, he can jump in with you and that. So then, so I jumped in with him the first time, petrified again, you know, because I'd seen this, you know, like I'd seen like the Highlander from Hell stuff, FWA and stuff, and like I knew of his history and stuff like that. So I was like,
and he could be an intimidating man.
Very,
yeah,
yeah, very intimidating man. And if he didn't like you, like you knew about it, he wasn't shy of telling you. But yeah, he was just sound me. And then when he saw me work, he was like, took me straight in. He was like, look, blah blah. And he just ever since that day, he just took me straight in, and just I was his kid.
Did you drive him around, or was he driving?
I was just like his little sidekick. He was driving around. I was just a little sidekick for the longest time. And then, it was.
Because that was weird, because when we got picked up, I remember being like, usually it's the kid that's driving the old guy around.
No. He was in control. So, yeah, I think, I don't know, maybe he made a few extra quid on X's. I don't know, right. Whatever. Yeah. But
So was wrestling full-time very quickly?
Yeah, so at that point, it was.
Living at home?
I was living with my cousin. Yeah, I was living with my cousin. Me and my cousin lived together. He had a decent job, so I just kind of did my bit. But he had like a good job. So
and he was understanding of like
he was, because he was a massive wrestling fan too and whatever else. But I still did my bit. You know what I mean? I still made what I could and still did my bit and stuff like that. But like then we split up. But by that point, I was doing like I was everywhere. You know what I mean? I was working all the time and stuff like that. So it was a case of like, I was making money, but I was out. I was away all the time. You know what I mean? So,
my thing was, when I was there doing that rounds, I was like, it's great for me for 3 months, but then I get to leave. Yeah. These guys are stuck in this job forever. There's no out. And at that time, nobody was signing.
No.
WWE was signing nobody.
No.
Before Drew and Sheamus and Wade, it was Burchell.
Yes.
Right. And before Burchell, I don't think it was anybody.
Nobody at all.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the last, maybe it would have been Regal and Finley, probably the last guys that went over since, in that time. Yeah. And it's funny because, like, I remember Drew telling me, because Drew was a guy that.
McDonald or
Drew
McIntyre.
Drew McDonald.
Yeah.
Drew McDonald. He was like, I took Burchell along to SmackDown. And, they liked him. And he goes, and I'm like, is he bullshitting me?
And I remember hearing that story that he got him Burchell the job too. Yeah.
I said it. And I'm like, is it like, when, did, like, do you do that? Is that a thing? You know? And I was with him all the time. Like, you know what I mean? And I'm like, but he just kind of came out the blue, you know? And I think he just got the call of like, can you find anybody? And then, you know, he was the guy that, you know, he found Burchell, and Burchell got himself the job. And then from then on, Drew became like the UK scout, like the UK guy they went for, like, you know, have you got anybody to, you know, to look at? So so that helped me a lot, because at the time, like you say, there was nothing going on. It was literally like, where do you go? Like, I have to move to America. I need to, you know, I need to be jacked up. I need to, do you know what I mean? You got to do all these things.
And so what were your thought processes like throughout the years of, like, did you get to a point where were you like, okay, what now? Or were you like, I just like doing this?
At the point I was just like, I just like doing this. I just like wrestling. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, where does it end? Where does it lead? I need to be making a move. I need to be making a jump. I need to be doing this.
Did you think about like moving to America?
Obviously it went through my mind, but like, this is the thing. So like, once you're on the Brian run, it's like you're earning money, but like, you're just surviving. You know what I mean? You're not saving money to go and buy a flight anywhere else, you know? And then that's not what you did as well. Like, cause that was the mindset that people like, you know, you don't buy your own tickets anyway. You know what I mean? Like they come to you and
Frankie
stuff.
Frankie Sloan letting everybody know.
Oh shit. And the rest. And the rest. But I agree with it, because it's like, you know, it, in a way, it's like, if I'm going to fly myself out to here, then that means somebody else who deserves, who should maybe be there, isn't getting that opportunity because they've got somebody for free. So
I'm not disagreeing with it.
Of course.
Yeah. So when Burchell gets signed, is that your first time when you're in the car with you and he says, I got a guy signed to the WWE?
Yeah. So at that point, I'm like, whoa, like this could happen.
And do you think like, and this guy's going to make it happen? Like secretly, or you're like, I'm not going to ask him, but that's what I'm.
Yeah, no, because in my mind at the time, I was like, yeah, it could happen, but like, I'm nowhere near. I knew full well, like, I'm nowhere near, like, the look of me and like just everything, you know what I mean? Like, I'm nowhere near, anywhere near that. And, but I was like, well, you know, there's an opportunity there. It happens. People, you know, come over to England now. And
there's gold,
you know,
at the end of the rainbow, right?
There is an opportunity. Yeah, there's something there, right? So, so then I remember, I can't really remember the timeline, just randomly. I think it was like 2005 or something. Friday night, Drew rang me up and he said, have you got suit pants? Yeah. He goes, all right, you're doing Raw and SmackDown on Monday and Tuesday.
They're working Cena.
Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking. Oh, wow. Like, you know, this is getting out of hand. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not ready for this. Going along to that just opened my eyes massively. Definitely. Right. Yeah.
I think for anyone who's a wrestler, that first time you get to see that world, just to see wrestling at a different scale like that, it's mind blowing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it led me to be like, I must get there. I don't know if it had those feelings for me. I don't know if it had for you, but I know it did. I was like, good Lord, look at this fucking
place.
This
is insane, right? Yeah.
Like, this is not like the high schools I wrestled
at. Definitely not.
There's something.
This isn't bowling.
Right. This is a machine going on here. So you eventually do get the eyes, right?
It took a long time. Yeah. I tried out quite a lot. And, you know, they told me, like, just go away and lose weight and do this and do that and change this and change that. And eventually I did. I went and came back in the best shape. And this was like, this went on over years, long stories, but like, it went over years. All came together in like 2010, and then they offered.
And that's so like 2005 was the first time. So 5 years of like
two times a
year. And if you told somebody like, "Hey, 5 years," they'd be like, "Fuck that."
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But we're just in it, and we do it, and we wrestle. And by the time you know it, 5 years is gone, and you're living life.
No other option. Yeah. No other option. Yeah.
Was that a no-brainer of move to America?
At that point, that was what I was working for. Mm-hmm. You know, I've invested so much time into this, and you know, like this is the only option to make money and to, you know, make a legacy for my, whatever you want
to
call it.
Have you ever been to America at that point?
No.
So
no.
Just, I always found, because
the furthest I've been was like Germany.
Okay.
And that was through Drew. Yeah.
Right.
he hooked me up with that.
Yeah. Because when I was there, when the three moved over, Drew, McIntyre, Sheamus, and Wade. And for me, I was just like, this is so fucking crazy that just they're plopped in a town, a different country. It's gotta be so, like, I drove 5 hours to move to where I had to, you know, Chicago to Louisville.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's still the same.
And I know America.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's gotta be such a culture shock.
Oh, it was, man. It was, this is the thing. So like, I'd lived for all that time from that first match, you know, getting there. So it was, you know, it was a good like 9-10 years. I'd just been wrestling. I'd just been wrestling up and down the country. Every now and again, I go to Germany, but like, I was just wrestling up like constantly, like five times a week, six times a week, seven times a week, three shows a day, all that kind of stuff, just for constantly for like 10 years. All that kind of stuff, the camps, whatever, you know, shows in buttfuck Wales somewhere. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, in a tent where you're like, there's a post office and a chip shop. There's no people. And then like, you know, bell time comes and there's like, you know, 500 people in there. You're like, whoa. And I'm like, of course, yeah, because I got nothing else to do. So of course they're going to be here. They're going to travel from miles around. But so all that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, you're moving to another country now. So I'm like, you know, I'd had a lot of life experience, obviously traveling the country and taking care of myself and whatever else. And you know, when I was young, like I was taking care of myself from a young age, but like, this is like a different world. It was a different world because, you know, things are done differently. And I mean, it's not like I'd moved to friggin', you know, Calcutta or anything like that, but like, you know, it, the mindset and just everything is, it's a different world.
American bank account, get a car, right?
Yeah, the social security numbers and like, getting an apartment, you signed up with the electric board and all this kind of stuff. And it was like, insane.
This is not a hard question. I know you didn't have the best experience.
No.
And these answers are like, it doesn't come like, it's easy to come out bitter, but I'm asking because I could say like, I think I'm a good wrestler. Mm-hmm. I know you're a great wrestler. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, they were dummies for, you know, me not being a star. I think they were dummies, you know, not that I'm great, but there was a lot of shit ones.
No, of course. Yeah. I totally get that. The way I kind of look at it is, I got signed by Johnny Ace. You know, he came from Old Japan and things like that. So like my style being physical and rugged and whatever else, he probably was like, oh, okay. Like I like that style. And you know what I mean? That's the style I prefer and that style I'm used to or whatever. So I like him. I'll sign him up. Okay. Let's go with him. Now, the story was, is they signed me and Matt and Stone up to be a tag team. They gave us an idea. So on the tryout, we were just doing tryout matches, random tryout matches. So like, you get in with him, you get in with him. So I just got in with Yestin Reese. We just did a little match. Finley called me over and called over Matt and said, pick two guys and just have a random tag match. So two lads jumped on. We just had this match. Yeah, so we had this match. Everything went well.
Fit, who probably likes you because you're Drew's guy, right?
Yeah, I think that probably helped. Yeah, the communication was there already. It's like, right. You know, like, oh, okay, he's, you know, like he's got the certification or whatever. I don't know. Maybe he's at,
I'm saying Fit, who's wrestled with Drew for,
of course,
25
yeah.
years.
Of course.
And Drew's like, this is my buddy. Like,
right. Yeah, this is a guy I've been trying to help. Yeah. Yeah, he's like, okay, guy, go get a shower and whatever else. Then we got a shower, went to catering, all that kind of stuff. And then Drew came and said, Johnny Ace wants to see you too when the show starts. So then they took us in. They said, right, we've got this idea. We want you to be football hooligans, shaved cool. heads. You two together look good as a tag team, and blah, 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 style and everything. We want you to get the gear, buy the stuff. We're really investing in the tag team. You know, like I think like the Jericho was the tag team champions at the time. And he was like, bringing the Usos are getting, you know, and the Hart Foundation. I don't know if the Hart Foundation was tag team champs. Either way, like, you know, we're really investing in the tag team division. So, like, you know, we'd like to bring you in, bring you to FCW for a couple of months, work on promos, all that kind of stuff. That, in my mind, I'm thinking, it's not going to be as simple as that, but I'm in. You know what I mean? Right. I'm sold on this.
Yeah, Johnny's told me I'd be there a couple of months at the most. A
couple of months at the most, right? So it's not just those. But in my mind, I was like, I know, Alice, this ain't
not me. I was like, yeah. Sweet, I'm not even going to rent an apartment. I'm going to live at a friend's house for 3 weeks and then off the road I go.
I'll be fine. But yeah, so then we went for the physicals and stuff, and I think there was a couple of hiccups with Martin's knee. Yeah, so I ended up going out first, and he ended up coming out later on when he got that all sorted out. Mm-hmm.
I remember that, yeah.
So it was me and Bram, you know, Tom Latimer. So we obviously always been like, you know, best mates since like 2005. He lived in Harrogate, I lived in Leeds, so it was like close, you know what I mean? We was, you know, close pals and everything like that. So like, and he got signed as well on the same day. So it was all three of us. So it was good to have him there, you know, good to have, you know, we had each other. So we moved over the same day, just before, I think it was like the 1st of December. Didn't stay for Christmas, just went straight over there. It was unsettling. It was strange at times, you know what I mean? It was like, because we'd come from changing rooms where it was just all the boys and like, you know, everyone's got their spot, so no one's worried, you know what I mean? Everyone's just kind of, whereas in this was like a shark tank.
Same way with me, I think, in Ring of Honor before I got there was, there wasn't enough money for people to be shark tanky.
No.
So it's just fun.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's no, like if you cut someone's, you know, whatever legs out.
Yeah, if you screw somebody over
for like, an extra $50 a night or
yeah,
whatever.
It's not. Yeah, and you, yeah, and knowing Brian, you ain't gonna get it anyway. Right. So like, you know what I mean.
But I'm saying in the theory of like, if you get a higher spot in Ring of Honor, like instead of making, you know, like 100 a night, you'll make 150 a night. You know,
right?
Like,
okay. What, yeah, like, yeah. Of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's really not.
But
worth
once
it.
You're in WWE, I mean, it's a matter of millions.
It's yeah.
It could be. It could be. You know, these guys who do it, you know, and make the right moves, they're going to be millionaires.
Of course. Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
and that's kind of when I realized, the same way you said that, like, we're all the boys or whatever, and now it's a different world. It's
like,
kind of place.
Like every man for himself. Yeah. And like, obviously, when I got like going back to the Johnny Ace thing, like, you know, he saw the style and stuff, and he saw that, and that was another thing he said was like, we told you to go away and get in shape. You did that. That's the kind of stuff we like to see. So, and I wasn't in bad shape because I remember in 2005, I remember meeting Chris Benoit, actually. I know that's but I remember he came over because he knew Drew because they wrestled together in Germany years ago. He came over and he shook my hand, and I remember looking at him and thinking, wow, this is a different, like, his neck was so thick and like he's just, his shoulders were massive, and I'm like, this is like a different level of,
and you would
look.
Hear the story, I would hear the stories of him doing like an hour of cardio on like 9.0, like running like a madman, just like sweating it, and
like, and you could, like, you, when you looked at him, he was like, yeah, I could, yeah, you can see the proof's in the pudding, right? got into that kind of level. But then when I went to FCW, I think, because Dusty Rhodes was in charge and stuff, you know, with creative and whatever else, I think he was like, well, okay, that doesn't do anything for, like, I don't care about that, you know, like, does he do anything? Does he sing? Does he dance? Does he do anything, you know?
Right.
Yeah. All I had at the time, and even now, all I had is just this, you know, my style, my physical style, not my appearance then, but like, my presence. Well, I don't know what you were,
whatever you
want to
call
it.
You were going to be the hooligan f- football team.
Well, there you go. So like, that's the thing. I turned up with all these Doc Martens and all these bleacher jeans and stuff. And I'm like, okay, I've got a tag partner. What do I do? Yeah. And so then they ended up just sticking me and Tom together, me and Bram together for just as like two Brits, stick them as tag team. So we ended up getting the trunks and everything kind of, it started materializing, it started settling in. They was putting us on shows, you know, at the beginning and stuff like that. And then there was a couple of hiccups. Yeah, then it just kind of went sour. There was a couple of times when we actually had some really good matches. So there was one between, it was me and Tom against Seth Rollins and Richie Steamboat. We ended up having this great tag match. It was like, oh God, the crowd was loving it and everything. And afterwards, like, all the management came up and said, oh, that was fantastic. From now on, we're going to start using you guys as villains. We didn't know you could work as a heel, blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff.
I didn't know you could work.
Yeah.
10 years.
I was like,
200 wrestling matches a year.
I was like,
300
exactly, yeah.
wrestling matches a year.
I'm like, ah, you know, I tried my best. You know, I think we got through it somehow.
So the impression that you asked to go home?
Yeah. Yeah. So like it was,
you know, you're there because I was in this kind of the same situation, even though I did get called up because I think maybe there wasn't as many people. And I was just like, they were like, this guy's a little, I mean, we don't want to make him a star, but he's too good to be down with these people. So
right,
like,
okay.
Just throw him up there and see if he does anything.
See, yeah.
Yeah. And so like, but that, like in my head, it's like, I was staying in developmental because I was like, you know, one day they just might be like, hey, maybe we need a pudgy Jewish kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like,
yeah,
I'm the pudgy Jewish, you know?
Yeah,
like,
of course. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, you know, like I kind of had this lottery ticket and I'm playing this lottery ticket of like, I had this lottery ticket of like, I'm one of 60 people at this place where they pluck the, like, this is the only place they get the WWE superstars from, except maybe, you know, they got a Braden Walker one time or what, you know, or came in and they took him.
Right.
But for the most part, this is where they're grabbing them. Mm-hmm. And you know, for us, it was the Santino story. Cause I was, I came like a couple months after so you know it was like Santino, they were like going to Italy like, we need an Italian.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
he became
yeah.
a legend, right?
Of course, yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
So, or became a millionaire or
yeah,
whatever
yeah.
it is. So
at least you remembered for sure.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's why I didn't go back to the Indies.
Right.
Because I just was like, if I go back to the Indies, they're not gonna one day say maybe we need a little Jewish guy.
Of course, yeah, that you, well, you know, you take yourself out of the game, you know what I mean? So like, if you're out of the game, then you're not going to get called up,
right.
for sure. Yeah. And that's, you know, that is...
So what was the decision that weighed on you for a while?
I mean, I don't want to go into too much detail because there was, I'll be getting people in trouble and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? Not you, but I mean, like, oh, well, no, I mean,
fuck,
I suppose, but I'm sure it'll, you know,
I want to know about your headspace and your mentality.
So my headspace at the time, I was like, there were certain people there that was making life very hard for people just for the sake of it. There was a lot of stuff that had gone on. And then when somebody went to management to complain about it, it ended up, the story switched up, they ended up leaving the company after a few, you know what I mean, like and stuff like that. So it was like, right, okay, so you can't say anything because that happens. Not that there's anything, you know, like I don't want to be getting anybody.
I mean, the same thing happened to me, but I didn't go say anything because I thought that it would get switched on me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course.
I was like, if I tell on this person, they're not going to fire that person or not going to fire me.
Mm-hmm.
And now that person who's more in charge of me is going to be.
Yeah, and you're at the peril.
And then I'm fucked.
Of course. Yeah.
And my life's fucked.
That's literally it. So like, there was a lot of that stuff going on there with certain people. And so like, I was like, this guy's making my life a misery. He's making a few of the other lives a misery. Like, I'm not going anywhere. My matches are drying up. It just got to the stage where I was like, you know what? Like I was massively depressed. I'll be honest with you. I was massively depressed and I've never been like that before. And, like my dad's got MS and things, you know, back home. So like I was on the other side, that, you know, pretty much of the world and things like that. And I was like, well, this isn't working out. I thought like, I get in the team, I get my chance if I work hard. And it wasn't the case. That's fine. That's life. And it just wasn't for me. So I just made the decision. I was like, you know what? Like there's just one day I just woke up and said, I can't do it anymore.
And then the day you made that decision in your head, is that the day you told somebody or did you sit on it?
No. So like I'd spoke to, like close friends. Like I spoke to like Tom, you know what I mean? Obviously he knew how I felt. One or two of the other guys, but if I brought it up to anybody, they were like, you can't leave.
Right.
You don't leave.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. This is, you stay here till they kick you out the door. And I'm like, well, to be honest with you, they probably are going to kick me out the door because I ain't doing nothing. You know what I mean? I'm just taking money. If they look at my reports, it's like, has he worked? Nope, he's done nothing. Right. Okay. He put Titus over three times. Then I think this is it. Like I just, you know, when you just have the moments in life where you're like, you know what? You need just like, I'm a very indecisive person. I'm like, should I go at 6 o'clock? Should I go at 5 o'clock? Should I get this train? Should I get that train? should I stay here? Should I stay there? Should I stay? Should I come home? You know what I mean? Like, I just set myself insane with it. With that, I was like, you know what? I'm done. Moved back home, came back straight back to it. Man.
Straight back to
the camps, yeah. So I was like, I think like the first week I was back, I had like 6 matches under my belt. You know what I mean? So,
see, I had a bit of depression. I don't know if it's depression or not. I think it was. Mm-hmm. After that, what does your body tell you? And what does your mind tell you?
So when I got back, I was just ready to just hit the ground running and just work. But again, like, so before I went, obviously there was nothing until the WWE started coming on and looking at guys, and then there was opportunity. But then when I came back, there wasn't really that many indies. There was a few indies, but most indies were just like, they do their training seminars, training sessions, and then they'd use their trainees and things like that. So it wasn't like they'd independently bring people in. When I came back, I jumped back on the camps with Brian Wrestle. Then I got a message from France, and at the time they was doing a really good, they were wrestling for like 500, 600, 700, 800 people, 1,000 people, like 2 or 3 times a week.
Yeah.
So I was like, whoa, and then the money was really good. Do you know what I mean? It was like 3-4 times better than it was working for, you know, for Brian. So they got in touch with me. I was like, yep, 100%. So then, I started doing that back and forth on weekends. You go back and forth to France, went back to Germany and stuff. And and then wrestling for Brian and stuff like that. Yeah.
And before you know it, I mean, you're one of the seasoned ones over there. You're just one of the better wrestlers over there.
Well, yeah,
from years of wrestling,
of course,
and also from training on, like, getting to train with a Norman Smiley.
You become
a better wrestler. There's no, you have to become a wrestler.
Definitely, I mean, like, training under Norman and Joey like Ricky Steamboat coming down, and Regal used to come down and, like, you know, really help, like, just little things, you know, to just help me with stuff and whatever else. So, like,
but then, yeah, so then you're a part of it. Then, like you said, you came back to UK. Mm-hmm. It was kind of nothing.
Well, then that's the thing. Like, as I got
blown up a little bit, right?
Just started kind of coming at speed. Like, NGW started like, okay, we'll bring you in and stuff like that. So then from there it was Southside, and then from Southside it was like PCW, and then all that kind of, then Progress, and then Rev Pro and stuff. We did some stuff there. There was one point when I was at my first daughter, I was like, right, okay, well, you know, wrestling's, you know, it's, everything was still good, but like wrestling's, like, you know, I'm thinking I'm going to have to get, you know, more stable job and whatever else. But then wrestling just kept getting better and better and better and better. And I was like, you know what I mean? Like, I've got to go with it, man.
And these places think about, like, okay, who do we put on our roster?
Mm-hmm.
And
I always, for some reason, I always just found myself there. Yeah.
It's, you know, the veteran guy, the guy who's good at the job. You want the best people on your, like you said before, you don't take the guy who's half as good for free. You take the guy who's.
Hopefully, yeah. That's the mentality, right?
Yeah. But right now, as we speak, in your head, you're like, well, I'll just wrestle and see where it goes.
Or? Yeah. So, I mean, like, the World of Sport thing came up out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Well, I was on ITV over here. That was a big deal.
Potentially
a big deal being on ITV and stuff, and how that could have gone and stuff like that. And then now WWE came over. They made an offer and stuff. You know, like, I was one of the first guys that they came to in the beginning. And then some back and forth, some stuff happened. And then, I ended up going with ITV just because the deal and stuff like that. And, just wrestling, man.
And I really enjoyed this.
Thank you. No, me too. Really
fun. It was fun to hear. Honey. You have a good story, and you know I'm a big fan of yours. So
I appreciate that, man. Thank
you. Since the day we met in the Leeds train station.
Leeds train. I remember it to this day.
you and I both.
Yep. I remember it to this day.
Thanks, dude.
Cheers, buddy. Thank you.
All right. Rampage Brown is on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Rampage Brown. He is the lead trainer at NGW Northeast. Information is at ngwuk.com. Rampage also does private and group training, which you can find more information about at rampagebrown.com. And of course, go see him live, BWR, March 6th in Cleethorpes. Wrestle Talk Showcase, March 16th in London. Rev Pro in Huntington, London, and Southampton in April. And he'll be in Bristol for Chaos Wrestling April 11th. And finishing up with Rampage is probably my cue to leave for the week. But before I do get out of here, please stay, enjoy, and listen to the plugs and
upcoming events.
All right, the best way that you can support, patreon.com/ColtCabana. All the past archives, they're ad-free, full Instagram Live call-in shows, never-before-seen Colt Cabana content, collector's pins, and more. ColtMerch.com/DigitalColt.com. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, @ColtCabana. Facebook/ColtCabana. ColtWrestling@gmail.com. That's where you can find my very public email. Maybe you're a promoter, want to put me in your upcoming show or convention. I'm still able to do shows, even though I am part of AEW. I have a YouTube channel. I also have a website, ColtCabana.com. That's where you can find my P.O. Box upcoming every Wednesday night, AllEliteWrestling.com. March 16th through the 21st, I'll be touring around Japan, NJPW 1972. Saturday, March 28th, Rahway, New Jersey, WrestlePro Online.com. Let's talk about Mania Weekend in Tampa. I'm still going to be there. WrestleCon and The Collective. Those are the two places you'll see me. Friday and Saturday, I will start each day at the convention at WrestleCon. Thursday, I got two shows. I'm doing the Super Show, and then at midnight, I'm doing a $5 wrestling show. Friday, I'm doing a live Art of Wrestling at The Collective. So far, my guests are PN News, Grado, Effie, and more surprises to come. Saturday at 3 is a live movie watch-along with Brian Zane and guests. That's at The Collective. And Saturday, I'm doing Joey Ryan's penis party at WrestleCon. Sunday, I'm doing the WrestleCon brunch, and I'm also doing the WrestleCon softball game. Intro music is by The Ukulele Teacher on YouTube. Outro music is by Superfund Yeah Yeah Rocket Ship. Podcast cover art and design is by Jimmy Lee. Photo by James Muscle White. Thanks to our sponsors, HighSpots.com and the HighSpots Network, the best VOD service out there. Watch these $5 wrestlings. They are so good. They also have PWGs. They just got so much wrestling on there. Shoot interviews. They also have AMA knee pads, gear, masks. You can even buy a wrestling ring from them. OneHourTees.com. They help run ProWrestlingTees.com. That's where you can find my shirt site with 10 new designs, ProWrestlingTees.com/ColtCabana. I want to thank my Patreons, Anthony, Caleb, Chris M., Christine, Claire, Davey, David, Dean, Ed, Finn X, Frederick, Gut Pocket, Joe, John D., John F., Justin, Maria, McBearme, Michael M., Murag, Nash, Nick, Nigel, Rudy, Scott, Tom, Vicken, and Victor. These Patreons are at the $10 level. They get the shout out and the pin sent their way. All right, that has been the show for this week. We got one more. And if you're listening this long, if you're signed up to the Patreon, you will get a bonus podcast with Ricky Morton that will not be on the feed. It is only for Patreon listeners. That will be after the last episode appears. Bonus episode, Ricky Morton. It was an interesting one. All right. This has been The Art of Wrestling for Colt Cabana. I'm Colt Cabana. Thanks.